except I know I couldn't deal with the rain.
You know, that's what everybody says, and yet when I get a nice rain, cloudy day, I could just get so much done. Because that's what I grew up with, and I just feel so young.
I think that's true.
Well, I think here, to have some rainy, moist day is a blessing.
But Amber
said it took hotter here.
It does get warm in here when we get people in here. I don't know why they can't.
Now, is she your daughter?
My daughter.
Adjust to Phoenix or just back?
Is that it?
Back to the rain.
Well, that'll do it.
Because she grew up here.
Oh, so she wasn't.
No, I grew up there. And then I met Ray. I was visiting my grandmother on my way to Chicago. So she grew up here, and she had gone down to Phoenix to school. Anyway, growing up, she said it took her about 2 years to adjust to it.
It depends on the day of it.
It's a different rain. It's not like a shocking rain. It's rain.
I mean, I came across.
Negative rain.
And there's certain things that way.
In Boston?
No,
you're talking in the
right. And then in the winter when it was really, really cold.
Oh,
I'm Joe Ritchie. That was me. I think we saw Joe Ritchie at the Boulder.
We can watch it. I don't want to go around. Continuing the tour here.
Wrapped around the folks. Yeah.
And I can remember my folks on that side, and I kept breaking 12 inches off the sidewalks.
Yeah.
And they called that year the thick thaw.
Too, don't we?
So anyway, he had mentioned that. And that's what happened. And then we were the they were de-icing their plane.
We have water
as we boarded.
Yeah, they're actually
as we were boarding.
Okay.
And then they de-iced over here before we took off.
Wow.
And
I thought, I don't know if I want to take off on this or not.
Anyway, that was the year we were the first. And only flight out for 4 days.
Oh my God.
Because it just froze and they couldn't get locked in and out. And we got
really
the sunshine. It was nice. And we had left home at 2:30. Or left my brother and sister. So early and everything.
You were glad.
But I was sure glad.
Yes, I'll bet.
And we would
Hello.
Hi.
Sorry.
I'm
I know you are. I'm Carol Tillman.
Oh, hi.
Nice to meet you.
Hi, Suzanne. I'm Garland from Washington County. Nice to meet you.
See, I have a preconceived idea about you
because when you first appointed.
Okay.
I happen to be with Deborah.
Oh, really?
Wow. I love her. So I figured, yeah, hand me that.
I love Deborah.
She's one.
We're in Aurora 5 years ago.
Oh, is that right? So that's your wife.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh. She was my
client.
Oh,
that's everybody.
Yeah.
Good. How are you?
Local government.
Having
a good war.
Before
election season. State county level.
I have. You want to need a glass?
I was hoping for. So there aren't that many sort of questions we've had at some of the prior elections. Seminars. So I guess my question is, do you all, would you like to do this as more of a dialogue or do you just want to take some?
Oh, because you've been to others.
Well, the last ones we've been to were pretty crowded and we only had an hour and a half, so we timed everyone at 3 minutes.
Oh, I see.
I see. Because we really didn't have to do the same thing, but we might have a little bit more time. Well, we can still do 3 minutes, but then we can see if anybody has any follow-up questions. I think we should have time to do that.
Sure.
Okay.
I'm looking around and it's some of the older policies.
Yeah, no, I definitely want a time limit because I know Barbie.
That's exactly who I was.
She came in yesterday.
Oh, just
early.
Oh, all prepared.
Yeah, we had a half-hour meeting with me about.
And so this is mainly just to get their input into what they think on the election.
Right, and we actually got a lot of really good comments, and not necessarily positive, but really just quality comments from a lot of real people, you know, precinct leaders and party chairs and just regular people. It was not the usual.
Activists.
Yeah.
Is that the word?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey,
Marsha.
Hi, Carol.
Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. Oh, did she?
I don't think so.
I think she just wasn't sure on that much
I think that's
what they think we need to work on.
Right.
Within reason.
Yeah. It got interesting.
Well, oh, really?
Yeah, because there's a big party division, you know.
Right, right. That's so true.
You know, and then you had some real, you know,
right.
Yelling back and
forth. It's in the conversation.
And right. You have the clerk there not.
Yeah. Well, he didn't come.
He
didn't come. The only clerk in the corner that came was.
Was Hillary?
No. My name is Carly.
Oh, okay.
Thank you for having me.
Hey. How are you?
Good.
Good.
How are you?
Good.
I've been seeing you in a long time.
I know. I didn't make it to Japan.
I think the provisional ballot is in the mess. And
be able to get out.
And I say that having
it's your office.
No. This is at, you know, the league does not have that position on the shoulders. It's just a better position. But personally, I'm involved in this stuff.
So if we go to all the offices,
I come around to
that would be the question I would ask.
Later registration. Do I mean later or do I mean closer?
You know, at some point, if we had connectivity,
well, they should.
We could. Oh, absolutely. And I personally am not so convinced we're going to internet. Not at all.
They were willing to.
Oh, and
they just wanted to make sure that it wouldn't be an issue.
I'm narrowing.
We have a time. Do we have a watch or a time?
Abilities?
Not really.
Okay.
If that's a good question.
Cool. Put you on your phone.
So we're going to do 3 minutes when we do it, right?
Yeah. Okay. Secretary let me do it once, and then he took it away from me. Because he had
lose control.
He had it running up to 3 and then going over, and I had the time going back down from 3 to 0 and then it beeped. And he said, "What did you do to the time?" And I said, "He said it's beeping." I said, "It's supposed to, so people know
this is going to make a noise." Should I make it quiet? I wonder if I should.
Well, see, I'm glad someone else agrees with my.
Oh, that's cool.
He said, "Well, then I can't tell them how far they went over."
They're not supposed to go. Uh-huh. Okay. Now I just have to figure out how to eliminate noise.
We don't have very many people who want to testify. So I guess we can dialogue.
You must be mother of the pack.
I think. Do you have an iPhone? You don't.
Not yet.
Okay, I'm trying to figure out how to make no noise.
I'm on make noise.
When the timer ends, but it doesn't tell me nothing. I've never used the timer. See, this is what mine does, and I don't think we need that.
Not everybody on
but
this.
He didn't like it. Oh, thank you. You want to be the timekeeper?
Oh, no, I was going
to. Oh, you're
so Suzanne, is this going to be. They just mainly give us input, and we just listen.
Well, I think that given that we don't have very many people signed up to speak, I'll go ahead and ask if anybody has any
even when you have
follow up questions.
Yes, it will.
Comments.
So I just went into.
I mean, the way we did it in the past was since it was just the secretary, he was closing it in 3 minutes, but then he would make comments if it was in an area that, you know, he could be helpful to the speaker.
But I meant our role is just to listen.
Well, what about
unless you want to make a comment. And, you know, if it's something that falls directly in on your knowledge on base, you may want to comment.
Thank you.
You know, like when we went out, some of it did have to do with the clerks and not with just, like we had comments about precincts versus voting centers and things like that. And, you know, we would tell the public, those are really issues there at the level. If you feel like you want to comment, you can. But primarily, we just
I gotta go.
Right. Don't you think we could dialogue a little?
Okay.
Yeah. Because we don't have very many people saying they want to speak.
Oh, good. Well, I don't want to dialogue.
You don't want to dialogue?
I mean, if I'm the only clerk here. You know, I'm not surprised. I've got no clerks. Because I'm a small county. We have another clerk in the back.
No.
She's from Median County.
Good afternoon. Are we running? This is a meeting of the Best Practice and Vision Committee in the Colorado Secretary of State's office. There's a fan on. The purpose of the meeting today is part of the Secretary of State's listening tour. And last week, we did 4 of these outside of the Denver area in Pueblo, El Paso, Boulder, and Arapaho counties. And we took a lot of really great public comment, not all of it positive, but we certainly got a lot of really good ideas about the 2012 election and how it went, and some great stuff looking forward to the 2014 election. This is our Denver stop, and then next month in January, we're planning on going out again onto the Western Slope, and then we'll be out in the Eastern Plains to take comment from all the citizens of Colorado about the election. And in our general view, the election went pretty well this year, and we think that there was a lot of participation and a lot of great things that happened, and saying that it can always be better. And so that's what this tour is about, is taking comment, listening to the people, and hearing what your experiences are and your suggestions. So I'll be taking a lot of notes during this meeting. And I guess just a couple housekeeping matters. We are going to keep time just to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to speak who wants to speak. We do have sign-up sheets back there on the table. And on my sign-up sheet, I noticed a lot of you, some of you indicated maybe, and if you indicated maybe, I'll probably call you up anyway. If you indicated no and you change your mind after you start to hear some of the things other people have to say, at the end I'll just ask if there's anybody else who wishes to speak on any issues. After you speak, we, the commission members, may have some questions or some follow-up for you. If you have written comments, I'd certainly encourage you to submit those to us. There's no deadline for written comments, as this is not a formal rulemaking hearing, but certainly the earlier we get those comments, the faster we can start to look at those in terms of future policy. Also, last housekeeping matter, there are no restrooms on this floor, so you have to have public restrooms. You have to go up to the third floor for that. I'm also going to just ask if all the commission members can introduce themselves so that you know who we all are. And then we'll just start calling people up on the sign-up sheet. If you want to go to the podium, I think that's probably the best place because the microphone will pick it up and we are being broadcast over the internet. So we can just start down here and introduce ourselves to people.
Good afternoon. I'm Faith Gross with the Legal Center for People with Disabilities and Older People.
I'm Garland Wall, Washington County Clerk and Recorder.
Thank you for coming. I'm Carol Tone from the League of Women Voters.
I'm Suzanne Steyard. I'm the Deputy Secretary of State.
I'm Joe Ritchie. I serve on the board of Coloradans for Voting Integrity and have been involved in election integrity issues for almost 10 years.
I'm Martha Tierney. I'm an attorney in private practice and counsel for the Colorado Democratic Party.
I'm Kevin Paul. I'm an attorney with Pfizer Paul Gruskin here in Denver.
State Senator Mark Scheffel.
Thank you. And first person we have is a maybe, so we'll see how this goes. Emilio Mata, would you like to speak?
Sure.
Okay, great.
I kind of was going to see how the flow of the conversation went.
Well, unfortunately, you were first.
I guess I'll start that flow.
Yeah.
My name's Emilio Mata. I was a poll supervisor at Mary S. Kaiser Elementary School. My first time ever being involved in an election, but I was very well trained by Andy, so nice job. I had some idiosyncratic moments on my first day, as a poll supervisor. I guess overall, I had 536 votes cast. I had one machine vote cast. I had 60 provisional ballots. I'm not sure if that's a high percentage on a 536 vote day to have 60 provisionals. Tried to make it extremely easy on my poll book supervisors, and if there was in any way, shape, or form a question on somebody's identification or somebody's, story or whatever, they would just, raise the flag and just call me over. It became a game after a while. They would just find anything and call me, call me over, and I would look at the situation, and more often than not, I put it on the provisional ballot. Rightfully so. I really do have to tell you that I placed an unbelievable burden on you guys checking after my service the provisional ballots. They, the threshold you had to cover, you had to, go over to get to a provisional ballot was relatively low in my area. If there was anything that was just a hair out of place, I would say, let's go provisional ballot. But I really would like to know what the procedure was after that to check out, those provisional ballots. Out of the 60 provisionals I had, 30, I would say, somewhere between 28 and 35 or so, would be people that walked in and said, hey, listen, this says I'm a mail-in ballot person, and I don't know how I got on that list. I've been coming here to vote, for 20 years, or I live just right down the street. There's something amiss. I don't know how people find themselves on a mail-in ballot when they're fully intending to walk into the voting booth and really, actually, quite frankly, like that procedure, like that that process, and feel that they're doing something towards the election system. So I don't know how that happened. And Of some of those people that told me that, I really just immediately trusted them completely. They're very, very upstanding people, and that's the good news. Bad news is I probably had, 30 people that just landed from Mars. Absolutely no identification whatsoever, absolutely no record whatsoever. In the process of filling out a provisional ballot, could not remember their address from 2 years ago. And one of them, I think in particular, struck me is she was a registered nurse from a hospital in Brighton. I hope I don't get sick in Brighton, but I think she was much brighter. I think she was much brighter than not knowing what her address was 2 years ago. I'm not sure if she just didn't want to say or whatever, but that was one of the questions on the envelope of the provisional ballot. So it's kind of like, what are you doing? What are you telling me here, or what are you not telling me here? Some people came in and voted with, Missouri driver's licenses and stuff, and that was like, okay, fine, whatever. Let's go provisional. Hopefully, it's going to get caught in some smaller net, down the road. I'm covering a bunch of subjects here. Generally, I think that the poll supervisor training was very good. It was pretty comprehensive. The 125 pages of new processes and procedures for me, which was a little hard to absorb, but I think now my second time around, now that I see what the box looked like when I opened it up and all the different things when I opened it up, I think that I understand it fully, fully now. The poll watcher situation in my polling place was relatively civil. We gave them; they became part of us. They really incorporated themselves into the whole process, and they were actually quite helpful on a bipartisan basis. Most of the day, so I didn't have a lot of the poll watcher discrepancies that I've heard, as in the big voter centers of Arapahoe County. So that was a real civil situation. So there was a real balance there. There was a little bit of confusion the night before when I was going to call people, my staff of 10, and that some people had dropped out like three weeks prior to it and stuff, but I felt that I had a pretty balanced, I ended up having like 8 or 9 people. I think I was pretty well staffed.
Well, thank you. Really appreciate your comments. As far as the provisionals go, there are some really specific guidelines about the acceptance of those provisional ballots, and it's actually teams at the county clerk's office that look at those provisional ballots and determine whether to accept them or whether to reject them. So we also recognize that is becoming certainly a more time-consuming process in Colorado, as we keep seeing, thousands of provisional ballots being processed every year and the time it takes to evaluate each one of those. So I particularly appreciate that comment. And
I think there's got to be a balance. We have to find a balance between the desire to have everybody be able to cast a vote, no matter how far inside the lines they are or whatever, but then balance it on the other side with an extremely stringent provisional ballot review.
Well, thank you. Appreciate your comment.
Okay, great. Okay.
The next person is Jen Raffi? Raffle?
Raffi.
Okay.
Thank you for the opportunity. This was a great idea. My background, I was a election judge in Adams County in 2010. This year, I was on the Canvas board that certified the primary election in Adams County. And I was denied the opportunity to be both a poll watcher and election judge. There's issues with my party chair that will be addressed at the appropriate forum. But what's concerning to me and important here today in this matter is in 2010, I challenged two voters. I didn't find out until I was going through the canvas board process this following year that neither one of those made it to the county clerk's office. And it wasn't until at that time that I brought it up that I started having issues with the county clerk. I ended up engaging in alternate means. I served in a war room for a nonprofit voter integrity group called Colorado Voter Protection. We took calls on Election Day for over 12 hours from across the state and even fielded some out of state. And I have to say, it was a pleasant surprise that the call volume was rather low. So that was a pleasant surprise. But there were some inconsistencies in that room that were also concerning. One being, not in just Colorado, but throughout the state, the numerous problems with the voting machines recording the wrong vote. I don't have any comparison statistics to measure previous year issues in that arena, but I do know voting fraud was really prevalent in the political blogosphere more so than any other, so I'm not sure if that had a factor, but the fact that we had multiple machines across the state and across the country have the same issue I think deserves some answers. And I agree that it's probably beyond the scope of this board outside of the state, but I would hope that you would look into it and try to find some common denominators. As I don't know if the voting machines are all programmed by the same company or if they vary county to county, but I would like to see something further done to look into that issue. On another note, during my canvassing time, when I participated in certifying the primary election in Adams, we were given a tour by our clerk and their staff. They are very well organized, and I think for the most part they do a fantastic job. But again, there were some flags. And the big one was when, during the tour, we were shown the tally room. And the clerk looked at all of us and specifically said, nobody comes in this room except for me and my IT guy. And I didn't think about it until I was in the war room on Election Day when we had similar issues in Boulder, which, by the way, has not certified their ballot. So I called the our county chair, and no action was taken. So I can't verify or validate whether poll watchers were allowed in the room or not. But I do know it was the policy of Adams County Clerk to not let anybody in that room. And I do know that's a violation of state statute. So I'd like to this board to take action to ensure that does not happen again.
Thank you for those comments. And let me first, I can't address the second one. I don't really have enough facts about that. But on the voting equipment, we did have complaints from three separate counties, Adams, Mesa, and Pueblo, about the flip of the vote. And typically the complaint was that the voter said they voted for Romney and it came up Obama. Now, they didn't actually cast the vote. What would happen is the voter would get to the review screen and see that it had not correctly tabulated their intent. And then they would go back and they would change it.
Right.
In reaction to that, we immediately went up to Adams County and tested that machine with Democrats and Republicans
and
in the room, trying to replicate that same thing. And we couldn't replicate it, but the Adams County did take that machine out of service.
Well, as a IT geek, I know that the programs that those machines run on are very easy to manipulate, as has been testified in court multiple occasions, I don't think in Colorado, but outside of the state. And it's very hard to duplicate a problem like that when it's programmed to appear randomly.
Right. And you know, on those particular machines where we had complaints, even though we weren't able to duplicate them, we did take the machines out of
right.
service. So I just wanted you to know that we did take action. And
no, I'm aware of that, and I appreciate that. There is the question, though. Those are just the voters that were paying attention. Most do not. So the question begs an answer. How many people's votes got flipped that didn't know?
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Excuse me. What was that third county?
Pueblo, Mesa, and Adams.
Well, if you can't do anything about the statute not being enforced by a clerk, who is the appropriate person?
Right.
Do you know who?
Well, I mean, statutes that fall under the jurisdiction of the secretary are enforced by the secretary's office. Statutes that may have to do with criminal allegations, those would fall under the enforcement of either the attorney general or the correct district attorney.
So what action do you suggest I take if I were interested in pursuing getting this corrected so it doesn't happen again?
On the machines or the canvas?
I'm talking about the tally room. That was a direct violation of Colorado state statute.
If you just send a, and I'll bring in some business cards, but we have an enforcement division in the department, and they take all complaints and investigate them, and we'll get back to you on some kind of a resolution, or at least as close to one as they can reach. And I'll give you a business card on my way out, and you can forward that to me, and I can forward it on.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Could I make a comment? I've heard that Colorado has some of the most strict certification requirements for its machines, for every piece of voting technology put out in the field. It's very strict certification requirements that the state is still in process of complying with. Is that correct?
Well, all machines have been tested and certified.
And they achieved proper certification before they were put out in
right.
the field. Okay.
Yes.
I saw something in the Denver Post a while back, maybe a month or so ago, suggesting that it needs to be, more work needs to be done.
Well, right. Yeah, prior to the election, we did have some DRE machines that when we went out and audited, we couldn't find full records for them, and we had to go back in and reload what we refer to as our trusted build software on a group of DREs in Arapahoe County. And then we also tested the DREs in Adams and Pitkin, I believe, in compliance with the security rules. So. The next person is Jelaine Hickson.
Thank you and good afternoon. I really appreciate that you are holding these sessions. My only regret is whenever I heard that you're having one in Eastern Colorado, I drove 4 hours here to make sure I had a voice, but thank you. I'm from Prowers County, which is Lamar. Our county is about 12,000 people. We have usually between 3,000 to 4,000 voters. In 2008, we had a county commissioner race with a variance of 19 votes between them. When we approached the county clerk and asked her for an estimate for a recount, our county clerk told us $7,000. And obviously stopped everybody in their tracks. At that point in time, I was the vice chair of Prowers County Democrats. I am now the chair. But at that point in time, we didn't know any better, and the intimidation tactic worked very well, and we stopped. In 2012, we had a county commissioner race with a variance of 70 votes and with 4,000 ballots cast. Again, we asked the county clerk to provide us with an estimate. She provided us a written estimate of $4,000. I responded to that by written inquiry, would you please itemize those costs? When she returned that itemization, it came down to $2,000. But in comparison, from some people I consulted with and some research that I had done, I know that in other counties, they had a recount in the primary election of 21,000 votes for less than $2,000. It was only $800. So to recount 4,000 votes in a small county like that, by my estimations, it should have been about a $600 or $800 charge. And although, and I appreciate your comment about who do we contact to make the county clerks adhere to the laws, I emailed you, I called your office, I had no help. So, other than after the fact, I don't know what you would suggest to me what you're supposed to do whenever the county clerk is not following the law.
Well, let me address recounts, because there is a division in who has the authority over recounts. And I know that you did contact the office, and I recall seeing a number of those emails, including the one where the cost ended up being too high and you declined the recount. Recount procedures and practices are enforced by whoever certifies that person to the ballot. So in a state race for state house, state senate, or a statewide race, the Secretary of State certifies the name to the ballot. And so the Secretary of State is the person to whom the request for a recount is made. And the secretary then works with the clerk on the costs and on the procedures, and oftentimes will send an observer to watch the recount. If it is a local race or a county race, then that race is certified by the county clerk. And the results of the race are also certified by the county clerk or the canvas board. And so in a recount for a county race, it's made to the county clerk. The county clerk comes up with the estimate, and the Secretary of State's office doesn't have authority over the recount because it is not a state race that we certified.
So you're saying the county clerks have the opportunity with no one is going to make the county clerks follow the law.
Well,
in a local race,
there's always a remedy to take that issue on a private action to court, but the Secretary of State's office doesn't have authority over the county clerk in a local race.
Well, I would ask you to address that, because that is problematic, because obviously smaller counties don't have the funds to take court action, on a small race. It's barely that these candidates can even get through a campaign on limited funds, let alone to proceed with court actions. And it does not seem that difficult for these county clerks to follow the law. And I will mention, so when we raised the $2,000 and we met this excessive cost demand, and yet when I produced those, at Friday 4:30 was the deadline, our county clerk also put a condition in there that the recount must start the very next day on Saturday morning, leaving me no time to, my canvas board members, one was traveling, the other was had a medical situation. And for to try to get two canvas board members appointed and replaced and informed in less than a few hours to be there on a Saturday morning to start the recount was impossible. So we withdrew our request, because I didn't want to pay the $2,000 and let the other party control the recount, and the Democrats not even be able to participate. So those type of demands, it seemed to me unreasonable.
Well, and I certainly appreciate the comments. We did spend quite a bit of time prior to the election putting out recount guidelines on cost estimates and a number of other canvas board activities and other matters that pertain to recounts, but those did only apply by statute to state races. And so, there's a couple legislative issues there that you may want to look at, and one has to do with the authority over these local and non-state races, and the other maybe for a small county like you, the trigger for a mandatory recount. Because if you're not getting a mandatory recount when you're only 19 votes away, that's a pretty slim margin. And in a mandatory recount, the state pays that cost.
Right.
Be reimbursed.
That would be wonderful to either with a percentage or a specific number of votes to trigger that automatic recount, because in these small counties, it's, and I think it happens more and more. I just don't think that there are enough people who are aware of the provisions of the statutes of how it's supposed to work. I'll also mention that my understanding of the statutes are that it is the canvas board, it's a citizens-led canvas board who is to control the canvas. Yet our county clerk denied us that opportunity for the canvas board to agree when to convene and when to hold the and the process of the recount. I'll also mention that included in those cost estimates that was provided to me, the county clerk was going to remove herself from the canvas board and delegate it to another county employee. Actually, it wasn't a former county employee, one of the election judges. And I asked, well, why would you do that? Well, she didn't want to do it. She didn't want to participate. How can you shirk your duty? It's not like she had a medical situation or had vacation plans in Hawaii or whatever. She just didn't want to do it. So thus, she maintained or tried to suggest that we should pay for that alternate person's, her delegate's, time. And that was included in the cost estimate, another violation. I'll go back a little farther regarding election judges. Back during the assembly and the caucus, I went to great pains to provide at least 3 election judges per precinct, and that was almost 3 times as many names that was required as was needed for our party. However, whenever the election judges were chosen in the primary and the general election, as well as the post audit, the names that I provided as a county chair were not used. Instead, our county clerk chose individuals who were former county employees. They were indeed registered Democrats, but nonetheless, they were not the people I had provided. And that disturbs me that we have a lot of county employees under the direction of the county clerk as election judges. Some of them are current employees and some are retired.
If you could send me those names, that would be helpful.
Okay. And then too, during the, and that was true during the provisional ballot review, she chose her county employees as the election judge. One county employee was a Democrat, one was a Republican. And we took issue with that. And again, our county clerk says that she had the discretion to choose the judges as she saw fit. So those are my primary comments. I suppose I might have forgotten a few, but I do thank you for this opportunity to give this commentary and look forward to your evaluation and recommendations perhaps to the legislature to make sure some of these things are corrected and that county clerks are better informed. I would also ask one more thing is perhaps in the 2014 election, if we could start some of this process of education maybe a year before, 6 months before, I think that would be very helpful.
All right. Thank you. Very much. And certainly anybody who drives in that far, give you a little extra time. But just to reiterate, in order to try to get everybody an opportunity to get up and be sure that they have an opportunity to speak, if you could limit your comments to somewhere around 3 minutes. The next person we have is Margaret Johansson.
She's on her way.
Oh.
She's not in the room.
Oh, okay. Ed Wood.
Good afternoon. My name is Ed Wood. I live in Jefferson County. I volunteered to help clear some provisional ballots after the election day, which was really quite an experience and good education. Was assigned 13 homes. This was on a Saturday, and is not too surprising, most of the people were not home. Six were, and two of them were issues that we were able to clear with getting proper documentation. But I was really concerned about the other four. Two of them were people with the addresses were listed as classroom buildings at Colorado School of Mines. One of them was somebody that had moved out of state 2 years earlier and was renting his house to some students. The fourth one was a woman who had moved to Indiana, apparently had moved out 2 years ago. But in any case, all these ballots were voted. Now, the good news is, of course, that the county clerk's office had done a splendid job in marking those ballots as provisional. But it occurs to me that that process is really inspecting the quality into the system. And in manufacturing processes, we find out that the best way of getting good quality is not to try the difficult process of inspecting quality in, but to make the system more robustly immune to errors by eliminating some of those invalid ballots when they're found. Now, I don't know if these four had been found earlier or the effort that I put forth was the first time they had been found. But I would encourage the Secretary of State's office to, when you do find invalid registrations, they really should be purged. Thank you.
When you refer to the ballots that you were working on,
yes.
Are you talking about ballots that had signature rejections?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these were all registered independent voters, and all were rejected for signature variances.
All right. Thank you.
You bet.
Danny Stroud.
Somehow got to the top of the list.
Yeah, I know. I think it was the Santa hat.
Good afternoon. My name is Danny Stroud, and thank you for giving me the opportunity. First off, this is a Santa hat, and I celebrate Christmas, but I don't want to offend anybody that does not celebrate Christmas, but Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to all of you. Thank you for doing this in a peak time here. But first off, is I would like to say something positive about Amber McReynolds. As I was a candidate for Congress, and prior to that I was the chairman of the Denver County GOP. And it's chaos out there, folks, as you all know. And I was able to go to Amber on numerous occasions for quick answers and clarification. And I just wanted to publicly thank her for that. That was very, very good. But where it really came to bear, yes, where it really came to bear is in 2010, my two daughters who are just of voting age, they were 19 and 20 at the time, wanted to vote, but they were both away at college. They got their ballots, the election, one of them got it on Monday before the election, and she wanted to vote so bad she spent $40-some of her own money to FedEx her ballot back. My other daughter got her ballot on election day and obviously was not able to vote. That was in 2010. I brought this to the attention of the director of the elections division, and in 2012, there was a concerted effort to reestablish confidence in my daughters that the election was something that they could participate in legally, and they got their ballots. One daughter was actually in transit to Europe at the time and was able to fill out her electronic ballot from some airport somewhere and was able to get it done. And I verified with Amber that they both were cast effectively. And my daughters thank you also for that because they're really they were really excited to be able to vote. So I wanted to do that. But the second thing I wanted to mention is this. There is a lot of angst and negative perception about mail balloting. I know that there's a lot of rhetoric and a lot of political infighting back and forth about it, but let's face it, perception is very important to the average citizen, and there's this perception that the mail ballots are somehow not as reliable as a polling place election. Now, I'm not going to comment on whether they are or not, but I think that we need to do a better job of leaders in our community to fix that. I know it's a cost issue, and I know that there's a lot of reasons for doing mail ballots, but until we get issues like the failed to vote ballots and all these comments about provisional ballots, we will continue to have a perception that the elections are not completely fair. And in this day and age, with the technology we have, and as much effort as we put into explaining why it's not messed up, it doesn't really matter. Perception is reality. And so I encourage us to not just try to hammer through things that are partisan in nature for whatever reason, or to put a partisan spin on them, but to actually make some investments. I mean, I buy computer equipment online for my business and stuff like that. There's never any doubt when that was shipped, when I got it, and that it was confirmed I got it. We should be able to do that with ballots, with electors, and I just think that we have to be more aware that the average citizen is not happy with the way the ballot, the elections are going. So thank you for let me have the opportunity to make those comments, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Are you aware of Ballot Trace in Denver?
I am. But how many people are there? There's 300,000 ballots went out. I bet you if you queried 300,000 people, you'd probably get a small percentage of people that actually
signed up for it.
What's that?
You mean signed up for it?
No, that actually know what it is, and that gives them comfort and all that. But, you know, we saw, I wasn't prepared to comment in detail, but I looked at the results of the mail ballots and how many just raw numbers were sort of returned undeliverable or were just not, they were just lost. I mean, they were mailed and they never came back, but never were cast. You guys probably know the numbers off the top of your head. When people see that and they know about that, that's what I'm talking about. Those numbers, if they're in the tens of thousands of numbers, which they are, is fundamentally unacceptable in the 21st century. We should be able to have better control.
Well, I absolutely agree with you, but for those who are aware of Ballot Trace, it really is a wonderful tool. It does tell you when they've printed it and when they've mailed it and where it is and then when it goes back and so forth.
In fact, so I use Ballot Trace. You have to remember to sign up for that too, though.
Correct.
And not everybody even knows to sign up for it. So what happens is, just anecdotally, some people would say, yeah, I've got my Ballot Trace, I've got my email, and other people go, what are you talking about? Two people in the same room, you know? And so there's this perception of sort of like slapdash.
Well, maybe we should advertise that more.
Well, advertise it or you know, I mean, we have things, you know, we have technology to control it, control passage of equipment and materials. We should be able to do that with ballots and know exactly where it is and what happened to it.
Yeah. One of my provisionals was Ballot Trace, and the reason she was in the polling place was that her ballot was lost in the sauce, and so she wanted to come in and vote and cast a vote to make sure her vote was counted, because she had been looking through all the systems and stuff, and there was no record of her vote whatsoever. So I said, okay, man, let's put you on a provisional ballot. So that fine mesh that I was talking about, provisional ballots, that reconciled it, did her vote, did her original write-in actually show up? Did her provisional get thrown out? What was the number of votes that woman cast? I know she cast one mail-in and one, you know, provisional. So how many counted?
Only one can count.
Mm-hmm.
First
Thank
one.
You.
Thanks.
You
for us. Mary Thunberg?
Thank you. I want to bring to the attention several things. First of all, approximately September 16th, I have the King Soopers receipt from groceries I purchased there. Fieldworks, an organization that I have the address of, as I'm passing their table outside of King Soopers, says, oh, ma'am, have you registered to vote? And I said, oh, no. They said, have you gotten your ballot in the mail? And I find out later that the ballots aren't even printed at that time. I say to them, no, I haven't. What are you doing? And so I approached them, and basically they let me know that I could register there, and certainly if I hadn't gotten my ballot, that I might not be properly registered and to do so. I find out later from a friend who also went to the King Soopers, same location, same people. There was a conversation that ensued. Anyway, it comes out that if they get 20 signatures on their registration system, that they get paid and that they can go home. I was lied to by them when I walked by. So Fieldworks has huge discredibility. There are other things that actually aren't coming to mind right now about that event, which may come to mind. I was at a Republican meeting where Don Ederberg said he received at his residence where for his deceased father-in-law an application to register to vote. And this man had been dead, I can't remember, I think it was something like 20 years. I know a good friend who had, so I don't know how the system is that somebody dead for two decades still gets a ballot in the mail to register to vote. Not a ballot in the mail, but an application to register to vote. Another friend of mine received four registration applications. This is one of them, and her husband has been dead for 7 years. So, and both of these people did not, that these address, the applications were not sent to the locations where those deceased had last lived. They were sent to the addresses of the living relatives, the nearest living relatives of those relatives of the deceased. So there was some tracking system as to how those as to where those relatives currently lived, so that maybe if they had a pension to register fraudulently for a dead person, they could do so. I'm not sure how that works, but we know that there are a lot of people who are deceased who are voting. Let me see, other lists. I have a good friend who worked the election as a greeter in one location, and she said to me, a fellow came up to her in broken English as a Hispanic and said, here's my green card, my social security, and my driver's license. What do I need to vote? Let's see. What? Was he registered? And I haven't been able to confirm whether or not that provisional ballot that he placed was accepted. Let me see. I don't know if this is relevant, but there were many people who had passports that were showed as identification to vote, but they did not have a United States identification card. That is from a greeter who's paid to be a greeter at the election polling location. Let me see. Another thing that was of concern to me is that I had asked Patty McCoy, our Adams County chairwoman, if there were any observers at the committee to, it's a canvas committee that happened a couple of weeks ago on a Tuesday. If there were any Republican observers on the canvas committee. And she said, no, we didn't have any. Because I had called the office the Adams County Election Office to see if that was possible. Anyway, I was told to contact Patty, but I contacted her one day too late. I did get a return phone call from the person who runs the office at the Adams County Election Office, stating that she had spoken with Patty McCoy the day before, and Patty was aware, and Patty had not requested for an observer to be there, and Patty said to me that they had a good working relationship, that there was no concern that we didn't have any observers representing the Republican Party at the Canvas Committee approximately 2 weeks ago. That's all I can remember right now.
Well, thank you very much for your comment. Trying to time
my
people.
Timer is just not cooperating.
Did you have a comment?
Yes, I just expanding on her comments regarding people who are on the rosters who have been deceased from that time. In a small community like ours, when we started down the roster, I got phone calls back. It's like I counted 12 people who had been deceased for at least 5 to 10 years. I went to our county clerk and I said, you know, look, we've got a lot of deceased people here. How do they come off? And she says, well, that unless the death certificate is presented to the Department of Vital Statistics and then forwarded to the Secretary of State, they don't come off the roster. And I said, you mean to tell me if I produce a death certificate to this county office, you cannot take them off the voter rolls? And her answer was yes. Is that correct?
Well, generally, I think they would then forward it to our office and we would take that action. Maybe you would know, but if somebody presents you a death certificate?
If we're presented a death certificate, we remove them.
You remove them. Okay.
Well, it's not working in our county because there were, at first blush, at least 10 to 15 deceased people on there who had been deceased 5 years or more. So it's not working. And then my other question regarding controls, because we're close to the state line, just a few miles from Kansas, if somebody moves, say, in October and registered to vote in Kansas, are there any controls so that person isn't getting the mail ballot of Colorado and also a ballot in Kansas?
There might not be any controls as to where they're receiving the ballot. There are controls if they actually vote two ballots. We have a system in Colorado where we interact with other voting systems, and Kansas is one of them. Last year we had 6 individuals who voted both in Kansas and in Colorado, and we did refer those to the FBI, and although the individuals weren't prosecuted, they were contacted and informed that they could not.
So is that a cross-check of Social Security numbers then?
I'm not sure what the matching criteria is, but it's a cross-check of voters who vote in 2 different states.
Because what alerted this to my attention was that a young woman married from Colorado in October moved to Kansas, re-registered with her married name in Kansas, and she didn't receive vote ballots.
So voting 2 ballots is illegal, and we do refer those when we find them, and we do look for them beyond just reports from individuals. We do cross-checking data. So,
and we'd have no way of knowing that they moved. Of course, we'd have no way of knowing that they moved if they don't cancel.
I remember Secretary Gessler and Judge Cho talking about the ERIC program through the Pew Center, and isn't that designed to resolve some of the issues with people dying in other states and still receiving mail for 10 years? And I don't know what state that project is in right now.
It is, and you know, it's really something that we need to engage, I think, a larger working group on, because part of the issue is we may have that data, but under the NVRA, we can't make a change to somebody's voter registration unless they request it or unless we get a piece of bounce back mail. So we could know from ERIC that somebody moved to Oregon, and we could send them a piece of mail in Colorado, and we could send them a piece of mail in Oregon, and we could say, in both places, did you move? If the piece of mail in Colorado gets delivered because they never changed their address or something like that, and the piece of mail in Oregon is ignored, then we don't have any ability under the federal law to automatically move that registration or to do anything else with it because we have no confirmation from the voters. So that's part of the issue, is that even though we may know we have data, you know, because voting is very fundamental right, we can't change voter records without some additional confirmation from
all the states or just voter.
So just be aware of the problem without being able to solve it.
Part. Yeah. I mean, as we move, as we get better matching data and better ability to find people and maybe have people opting into certain email notifications to make it easier for them to change, you know, many of these things are guided around that philosophy that people will change, but, you know, probably you aren't going to get a whole lot of people after they've moved to call up their county clerk, you know, or write them a letter and say, I've moved. But we are working with Eric and Pew on that project to get better matching data.
I wanted to mention something else that I recall, which is that at the 122nd and Pecos location, the supervisors were, one was a Democrat and one was a Republican, but they're a married couple. I think that there is a possible conflict there. I think that it's okay. I think the rule to allow a married couple to be in charge of a voting polling location, maybe one could be a supervisor and one could be a greeter, but not to be both supervisors of that location.
Okay, thank you. That's a good suggestion.
Wrong. And the other thing is, I just wanted to mention that the greeter that I spoke with said that she had seen passports from Iran, Germany, Russia, India, Mexico, and some others, but they had no U.S. ID.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Harvey Branscombe?
Am I really the next in line?
I think some people have probably changed their minds and they really want to speak now, but we'll get back to them.
Okay. Well, I just arrived. Sorry, so I haven't heard what's been spoken before me. Harvey Branscombe from Elgibel, Colorado. That's in Eagle County. I am a canvas board member from the recent election representing the Democratic Party. I'm a co-chair of the Democratic Party in Eagle County, member of Colorado's for Voting Integrity and Colorado Voter Group. I have spoken in front of this commission before. I've spoken in front of the Secretary of State at the rulemaking that created this commission, with the high hopes that this commission would take on the really difficult issues facing Colorado elections that come about because Colorado is basically leading the pack among states in exploring new voting methods and new forms of auditing. We have basically invented the vote center. We have adopted a heavy dose of mail-in voting. We have high incidence of provisional voting, a lot of different kinds of late-counted ballots and increasing numbers. So basically what we're doing is carving out new territory, and our regulatory scheme, our laws, our rules, seem to be behind. They're not catching up, perhaps understandably so. But this, I believe, is the commission that I would hope has been tasked with the job of figuring out where we, our laws and rules, miss the boat on these new methods. And but I'm afraid that so far what I've seen is that the commission has been tasked with dealing with smaller issues, specific issues, but ones that don't really handle what we need to talk about. So I'm a little bit at a loss here to figure out where to go with my comments, because I could go on, as you probably know, for half an hour, 2 hours about different things that haven't been done in Colorado, places where the law and the rule are in conflict, places where things are happening in counties that don't make sense, and in particular, evidence that citizen oversight really isn't performing the function that it perhaps once did when citizens were actually conducting elections in polling places. And there, that was a scalable model where large counties and small counties alike both had precinct-sized polling places run by a handful of election judges, and the voters in that precinct basically got a chance to experience what the voting system was because it all happened right there. And the election results were communicated to a clerk and recorder who then documented those and presented them to the state. Where we are now, in most counties and not all counties, is something quite different from that, as I'm sure almost everybody here is aware. But our laws are mostly written to, particularly about citizen oversight, are written to account for that precinct polling place model. And even the step of aggregating the precinct polling places into super precincts actually aggravates the problem, because it tends to mean that voters are voting further away from their home, and there's a concentration of voters without an equivalent increase in the access for oversight. Now, an even bigger issue is that Colorado starts tabulating ballots, mail ballots, up to 15 days before Election Day. That's very unique, it's very unusual, and it's also dangerous because I'm sure everyone here knows that there are potentials for leaks of election results. There are chain of custody issues that happen when you start opening ballots early. It would be better if we could revise our election system to simplify it, but with the goal in mind of engaging better, more effective citizen oversight. Meanwhile, however, I would point out that I want to just quickly refer to the Senate Bill 155, House Bill 1036 process from last year, which some of us citizens were so involved in. We had hoped and came to the table with the representatives of the County Clerks Association with the intention of producing a bill that would serve the purposes of the clerks and the public. And what we apparently got was something quite different, and the process that created that was really quite distasteful. And if it were actually written down on one piece of paper, it would be hard to read, because the nighttime unannounced committee meetings and so forth, and the change of the bill number, the squishing of the contents into a separate bill, et cetera, all of that doesn't look good. It sure the heck doesn't look like transparency to the citizens, which is what the bill was presumably about. I do hope that we don't see a repeat of that, that we do see an instance where the citizens and the clerks can find a middle ground between their sometimes differing agendas and perspectives. So not always, but sometimes. And that's going to require some openness on the part of the Clerks Association, which I do hope happens in the near future. And I'm glad to hear about any instance where there is someone standing up for the rights of citizens to hear their elected officials talk about election policy. And I'm equally willing to share our thoughts, the public's thoughts, about possible improvements in election policy. And so this is an open ask to the clerks to listen to me, to invite me and my colleagues, some of whom are in this room, some are not, some are listening, to come to the table and not be shut out of the little summit meetings that happen over at the state capitol during the legislative session that happen year after year. I managed to attend about four of them last year, although I wasn't invited. I want to talk about...
Isn't it time?
Yeah. The buzzer went off.
Sorry, I didn't even know what the time limit is.
Yeah, you're about a minute and a half over.
I am.
But we'll see you at the Western Slope.
You will? Is that not this commission? But if you had the commission meet on the Western Slope, that would be a good thing.
But the secretary and I will see you up there.
Okay. I'd like to mention one thing, as I didn't know I was going to miss that chance. I think we can actually look at some really major improvements in the way we do elections with some relatively small changes, and a lot of them have to do with the audit. We can use the audit to produce a confident and certified accurate election result if we design our audit properly. Our audit is not designed properly, and there's supposed to be a legislative intention expressed to produce that. And this commission really ought to be pushing the Secretary of State's office to proceed ahead to look at all the interesting and available audit mechanisms that fit with new voting systems, and with the eye of using the audit as the means for producing confidence in the election, not public relations output from the Clerks Association, for example, or other election officials. And in particular, I believe it's possible to do a very efficient, well, we know it's possible to do a very efficient audit. What's interesting, though, would be to do the audit on election night. If we did the audit on election night, we could actually, with a very little amount of effort, that is to say the minimum amount of effort needed to obtain a confident impression of what the election result is, we could actually publish the results of an audit that's done by ballot polling on election night and not require clerks to finish processing every single ballot through every single voting system and give a breathing period for that process to take place, which would then produce a more accurate a result from the election, not just outcome, but result, whereas the outcome would be predicted by the audit, which could be done on election night.
All right, Mr. Branscombe, thank you very much for your comment. I don't have anyone else signed up to speak, but I know there must be others out there that maybe Mark knows that meant yes. Oh, okay. Do you want to go ahead?
I'm sorry, I signed up on one of the sheets, but maybe it got lost. Good afternoon. I'm Elena Nunez with Colorado Common Cause. We're a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that works for open and accountable government. We also coordinate a nonpartisan election protection program that's known as Just Vote Colorado Election Protection. The goal of that program is to make sure that every eligible voter in Colorado has accurate information to be able to cast a ballot and have confidence that that ballot is counted accurately. You have some written comments from Common Cause on a couple of the groups who participated in the program this year. Some of the things that we noticed this year were already addressed, but I want to just highlight a couple of things. First, I want to echo the comments of Danny Stroud that the clerks, certainly Denver elections under Amber McReynolds and Deborah Johnson's leadership, but clerks throughout the state were incredibly responsive to the issues that we saw this year and helped us make sure that when there were problems both leading up to and on election day, they were addressed quickly. We saw that generally it was a smooth election, but there were problems throughout the state, and when we saw those problems, we really appreciate the leadership of both the clerk's offices and the Secretary of State's office to address those issues. One of the things we do as part of the program is to run a bilingual hotline to give voters information. The vast majority of questions that we get have to do with basics like, where is my voting location? What do I do with my mail ballot? I didn't get a mail ballot. We did see, though, that there were a significant number of calls leading up to and on election day that had to do with concerns around voters' registration statuses. There were a variety of reasons for this. Some of them had to do with voters who were inactive, failed to vote, and as a result were no longer on the permanent vote by mail list, expecting a mail ballot and not receiving one. We also got significant calls from voters who had moved and did not know that they had the ability to update their registration using the emergency registration statute. We also got calls from voters who tried to use that statute and found that there were different ways that that statute was interpreted at polling places and during early vote. So that was a problem as well. And then finally, we did get a handful of calls from voters who had trouble registering to vote using the online voter registration system. In one case, the voters who called had printed out a receipt, and so they were able to vote. We also did talk to another voter, though, who didn't have a receipt and was quite disappointed to hear that he wouldn't be able to vote on election day. We also saw significant problems that dealt with the fact that even though the vast majority of Coloradans vote early or by mail, we do still see significant numbers who show up in person on election day. And we saw reports from counties throughout the state that were not prepared to deal with that, either because voters who had requested mail ballots appeared on election day or the projections for election day turnout were just not what they had planned for adequately. And then finally, we did see issues with election judge training, again, throughout the state. I want to note again that the clerks were incredibly helpful when we saw problems to retrain those judges, but we got calls from many of the counties where election judges were improperly enforcing the voter identification law, in some instances requiring photo ID, in other instances requiring that the identification address match the voter's address if they were using a driver's license. When the clerks heard about it, they were quick to retrain, but it did cause a problem for voters on election day. In closing, we did see, you know, that for the most part, it was a good election. Voters were able to participate. We do think that there are changes that could be made to Colorado statute, particularly around our registration statutes, to alleviate some of the problems we saw and make sure that everyone who's eligible to vote is able to participate. Thank you for your time.
And I have one follow-up. With regard to the voter who didn't have the receipt, we did have an emergency rule there toward the end about people who tried to sign up on the mobile and having their provisionals counted. Do you know if that person tried to vote provisionally and it wasn't counted, or?
He did not register using the mobile app. He registered using the traditional online system. We encouraged him to vote the provisional ballot so he'd be registered going forward.
Right.
But
we don't know.
But the rule didn't cover his situation.
And he didn't get vote credit?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Jeff Crump. I'm vice chairman of Colorado or Denver County Republicans and also First Congressional District Republicans. And I worked with the election division both as a trainer for about 6 weeks and then as a supervisor at a polling location. And I want to commend Amber, Katie, Andrew, the whole team of people having worked from the inside. I'd like to commend them on their integrity and the hard work they put in for Denver County to make the training process as well as the day of elections run as smoothly as possible. And it was a pleasure to work with them. I do think there was an exorbitant amount of provisional ballots. My polling location processed about 600 ballots and about 25% of those were provisional. So it made for a long evening since I was a supervisor, and basically it was my assistant and I were the only two that could process it. So at that location with 25% of the ballots coming in provisional, it would seem to me that that needs to be tightened up a bit, and I'll just leave it at that.
Which location was that?
I was at Swansea Rec Center. Not many Republicans up there, so they sent me out there by myself.
All right, thank you for your comments. Anyone else? You want to come up? Come on.
Marilyn Marks, Citizen Center in Aspen. By the way, I think you have another speaker who's coming. Mark Arnold just texted me that he's on his way.
Okay.
Okay, great. At Citizen Center, we are a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. We're focused on open government, transparency, and particularly this last year, election transparency. And this year, I had the opportunity to work in detail with Boulder, Pitkin, Prowers, Garfield, Pueblo, and learned many of their problems in great detail. I could spend way longer than 3 minutes on talking about the hundreds of problems that we experienced, but you heard a lot of them today. The common themes of mail ballot issues, provisional ballot issues, judges not being able to be appointed by their parties and instead the clerks appointing them. Every topic that we've heard today can be addressed with one simple solution, and that is full transparency and citizen oversight. It's one thing that Colorado is extremely weak in, and we're getting weaker at every election. I've been involved now for almost 4 years in elections. Every year I'm seeing a dilution of the citizens' power over their elections, and I think that what you're going to see in the upcoming legislative session is a real fight over whose elections are these anyway. Are these the citizens' and the voters' elections, or are these the clerks' elections? And I think that we've already been signaled that the clerks plan to attempt to, dilute the power of the canvas boards and the political parties in citizen oversight, to dilute the power of watchers, and to dilute the power of the parties even in appointing their judges. We're seeing a struggle that's basically the struggle of, do the elections in Colorado belong to the people anymore? As I talk to my colleagues across the United States, I am almost embarrassed with the reputation that Colorado has developed for the lack of transparency. Many of you have talked today about provisional ballots and the great number of provisional ballots, and somehow they go into a black hole, and nobody has talked about the fact that those provisional ballots are approved by not even bipartisan teams. The law allows, in Colorado, the clerk to handpick his or her team to review those ballots. We know that in many counties, it was a handpicked team without bipartisan oversight. No watchers were allowed. No public was allowed. Contrast that with what other counties do in other states, where provisional ballot applications are flashed on large screens like this one, and the entire public gets to say, oh no, Joe's voting in Kansas. He can't be voting here as well. Why is Colorado in this black hole? Many of you have mentioned mail ballots. I wonder if the general public knows that there were 16,000 people who attempted to vote who probably think their vote counted, and their vote is sitting in a ballot box, right? It's not sitting in a ballot box. It's sitting in a dead letter box, if you will, in the clerk's office without them having had a chance to vote. Many of us would have been on the phone with those voters to let them know to get to the polling place, or get to the clerk's office and have their vote count, except that the clerks absolutely refuse to make public what is a public record, and that is the list of voters who... That's okay. No problem. Had been rejected because of signature discrepancies. Again, the answer is transparency, and I would just ask that the Secretary of State's office begin to focus on some of these issues you've heard about today and be willing to use your enforcement powers. You do have enforcement powers up and down the ballot, not just on state offices, but you've got enforcement powers on anything in Title I. And many of us would like to see you start using them so that citizens can again regain control of their elections. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone else wish to speak in the audience?
Margaret did arrive, yep.
Oh, okay.
Hello, my name is Margaret Johansson. I'm from Boulder. I did get a chance within a 3-minute window to speak up when Secretary of State Gessler was in Boulder recently. But I thought I would just make a couple of other comments. There has been a letter which has been sent very recently to President Obama picking up on something he said about how we really have to deal with long lines. And it was a letter which was signed by 50 people, many of whom were the top premier cybersecurity people in the country. I don't know how many more there are, but there were some very illustrious names on that. And they were making a pitch for doing away with the unauditable DREs, which got us into a lot of problems a few years ago, and a lot of people haven't gotten rid of them across the country. That was number one. But they also raised the problem with internet voting, which really has not gotten enough attention, so the public doesn't know the extent of the hazards. And they just said it was not to be used right now. And some people whose books I've read have said that when our internet was developed, it was developed by a lot of scientists that were talking to each other, and there was a certain amount of basic trust in the exchanges, and they really didn't have any idea of what it was going to turn into. So it really was not developed with security as a primary thing. And so internet voting as a part of that, along with all the other hacks that have happened to the Department of Defense, to Google, it goes on and on and on. Internet voting is also subject to these limitations of security. And there have been what I would call special interests pushing for internet voting. And I will not reveal who's been the culprits, but it seems so. That's a very strong statement. And I've read estimations before it could possibly be made secure to a decade, and then J. Alex Halderman, who had that notable white hat hack in D.C. a couple of years ago, where they were allowed to come in and they took over the system in 36 hours. And he's since given an online course, huge proportions, so it is getting out some of the, to some people at least, what the flaws are with internet voting. But the struggle with getting the public to recognize this and not accept it goes on. What made it worse in this state is that we have a very confined use of internet voting, which includes the return of voted ballots by email or fax. We weren't supposed to use it. If there was any other more secure way, which returning stuff by regular mail, or I think there's some provisions for quicker mail. But sad to say, our Secretary of State apparently has not been convinced by anything we sent them about the dangers of internet voting, and he did not observe that control on the amount. He did not observe with the pilot project that was due, which was conducted in 2012, which was originally written in law for only overseas military, which we tend to think have the hardest time keeping up with getting their ballots in on time. He ignored that, so it was everybody who was overseas, some people not in the military, everybody. So it made, I don't know if anyone hacked any of those many votes that really were not even allowed in law to be voting that way, because you can't track that kind of thing. But it was very upsetting. And there's the whole issue of whether some of the stuff they were using, ballot marking devices, which they allowed people to cast their vote on their PCs, that the Clerks Association caught one glitch, which meant that the system wasn't secure. And there's a lot of other things that I think they should have worked harder to get certification and stuff that's in law. So to make a wisecrack remark, if we're paying for a whole system to Everyone Counts, which is the firm that we were using, and they say, they assure us in their contract that it's, that the system is secure, and yet that flaw that the clerks discovered where anybody could put in a vote, do we still have to pay for all the money we expended with a system that really wasn't secure? Because it probably wasn't tested very well, if at all. That was my wisecrack remark. And I guess I'll stop there. If the, pardon?
How do you know it wasn't tested? What is your proof of that?
That it was, well, I know someone personally who tried it out and was not.
One person?
No, I don't know who in the Clerks Association discovered this, but some lawyers.
Then that's hearsay.
That I know read about this and tried it out. And it was supposed to be confined to classes of overseas people, perhaps the military in this country and their families in this country that weren't voting. They were voting from somewhere else in the States, not from Colorado, but it was a huge group. So people tried it out, and they were able to cast, to get a ballot, which they weren't supposed to. And then they said they tried it out several days later and it no longer had that glitch.
We had a complaint that about 10 people had been able to get on and print out a ballot, even though they were not overseas. They were not able to cast that ballot, but I think about 72 hours after that, we were notified of that by the clerk. We went back in and looked and saw that about 10 people had been able to do it, and our office took measures to remedy it. For those of you who don't understand this issue, what she's talking about is this year the secretary, in an effort to get more voter participation overseas, instituted an everyone counts system, which is not an internet voting system, but a ballot delivery system. And so the ballot is delivered to overseas military and other residents, and they can then, with a secure code, pull up that ballot, print it out, mark it, sign it, and then either scan it back in and email it to the clerk's office or print it out and mail it back in. Those go out 45 days prior to election to try to give our military and overseas population some additional opportunity to get their votes in. We saw an increase of about 25% of military and overseas voters this year from the 08 election, and so we were very proud of that system. We had a lot of good feedback from people that we had made it that much easier for people overseas to cast a ballot, and especially those in the military who may not get mail regularly, may move around a lot. They generally will have access to an email account, and so that was the delivery system. And obviously, the secretary and Ms. Johansson disagree on whether that's, quote, internet voting. The secretary believes that a ballot delivery marking system is not an internet vote. The internet does not cast or mark the vote. So,
well, it was my understanding that the ballot marking device allowed anyone with a PC to mark the ballot once they had it on their PC, and this is where it gets very risky. Then, because not as many people consider returns by email, electronic returns by email, being having its own very significant threats, they allowed that more than was in the law. So there's two parts. And there was an option in the system to do what she just described, which is just to download, fill it out by hand, and mail it in. But that was not talked up. It was not encouraged. We, CFBI, Colorado Voting Integrity, wrote a letter suggesting that if the ballot marking devices, where you filled it out on a computer, had not been certified or tested significantly to see if it really was secure, because we don't know what happens to those ballots when they go into the votes.
I would think that if people are able to vote on the internet or get a ballot on the internet, and read that ballot, they would be able to read the instructions that are also on the program.
There were no instructions advising you that it is a whole lot safer to fill stuff out by paper and by hand.
Down below, or someone said that down below, they could either fill out the ballot and mail it in, or they could scan it in. That says to me, you've got two options.
Okay,
and
but the two options.
If you're that suspicious of a machine, then maybe you ought to just print it out and mail it in.
Well, that's what we advise, but people have illusion. People put too much faith in internet voting because...
Well, you know what? We're not parents. If they don't know how to read, they've got a problem.
Okay. That's your opinion.
I'm going to make an important point, and I think it's to the Department of Defense's credit for once. When they introduced this method of ballot delivery, they required every GI who used it to sign a waiver, or they waive their right to a secret ballot because of the inherent vulnerabilities in that method of voting.
Okay, well,
and
the answer...
I think that there are other methods of voting in Colorado and around the country that deserve the same kind of upfront declaration. Yeah, maybe there are some chain of custody issues with mail ballots. Maybe there are some post-election chain of custody issues with provisional ballots. And educating voters on this stuff is a challenge. And a lot of us are trained in getting out the vote and getting participation up, to use the KISS rule, keep it simple, stupid. But some of this stuff gets to six-point type when you're trying to inform voters with by mail and other means. But I think that's the ticket, though, is for the public to become a lot more educated about each method of voting and what the gold standard is, the tin standard is, and very vulnerable methods of voting like you're talking about.
Well, there also have been active and very powerful letters go out to every state encouraging internet voting for the past few years from the Department of Defense. No mention was ever made of any security considerations. Now, we can all invent our reasons for why this what the scientists say very clearly, has multiple ways of being hacked. And if you follow how many times this has happened with things other than voting, you know there's a huge budget now for cyber wars in this country because, not necessarily with internet voting, but all kinds of other things, it's a national security issue.
Thank you for your comments, Ms. Johansson. Did you wish to speak?
I did.
Okay.
So I'm finished?
Yes.
Yes.
My name is Carl Hoops. I was a primary candidate for Adams County Commissioner this year and an election judge in Commerce City. And I wanted to say that in my work as an election judge, we had quite a significant number of provisional ballots. We had people who came in to the voting center, sat down to fill out their provisional ballot, picked up their cell phones, and in Spanish were trying to get instructions on how to vote. Now, as soon as we saw that, we shut it down. But I definitely had some concerns about efforts to increase the voter participation of people who had no business voting, who had no right to vote at all. I did get a number of comments from people who said they wanted to vote in person, and yet they got a mail-in ballot. And I'm very curious to know, what is the system for people getting signed up for mail-in ballot? Is it possible that there's something they did accidentally, or is this something that you have to affirmatively say, I request to be made a PV, because I got a bunch of that. Is there perhaps some confusion in registering or re-registering if you move, that there's just a little checkbox that they think, oh, okay, yeah, it's just another checkbox, that maybe they're missing something? And I have a question for you, the experts. In my training, I got a chance to take a very close look at the voting machines. And they're very impressive. There are a lot of safeguards, a lot of seals, a lot of serial numbers you record, which is excellent. But I also have some concern that there's a possibility that at least on some of these machines, the voting could get rigged. And the ultimate safeguard against that is supposed to be the printout, the tape. My question is, has there ever been an audit performed of comparing the voting tally electronically against the paper tape? And if that has happened, under what circumstances? What causes an audit like that? Frankly, what I'd love to see to raise my confidence in the voting system is a random audit. Maybe one out of every 1,000 machines, you just say, okay, this one we're going to check. We're going to pull the tapes, and we're going to make sure that the system is working the way it's supposed to. But my question is, has that happened?
We do random audits under our security rules of the machines after election, and then in between post-election, both on that issue and on the issue of, I think I talked earlier about some DREs that were done in Arapahoe County that we couldn't find all of the logs to show where our trusted build had been loaded, and we went back in since we couldn't find the logs and had to reload it all on those machines prior to early voting. So we do test it, and where we find problems like that, we will reload our software and reseal the machines to ensure that when they come back up the next time, there are not preloaded results or any other kind of tabulation problems with the machines. On the other issue that you brought up with the number of people who received ballots who maybe did not intend to, it is a checkbox on the voter registration form,
okay.
I wish to receive all mail. You can also do that online, and
right.
You can reverse it online.
Right.
An additional issue that we saw this year that I think we're going to try to change just on our forms was that we had a number of people only fill out mail-in ballot forms and not fill out registration forms.
Oh.
And mail-in ballot forms are not part of voter registration drive regulations. And so anybody could go out with mail-in ballot forms and pass them out to people. and sign them up for mail-in ballots. Well, if that form didn't come back with matching criteria to a registration, then we may have had voters believe they were signed up to vote through this mail-in ballot form who actually hadn't filled out a registration form. So that's one issue we're looking at, is maybe just trying to combine those forms so that we don't have so many different forms floating out there with that kind of misunderstanding.
So on these audits of the machines, can you give some sort of an idea of how many were audited after this general election this year, or what percentage of machines might have been audited? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a logic and accuracy testing prior to the election where the parties get together, one representative from each party, and they fill out 25 ballots each and they run them through the machines, and they also vote the disability machines and the voice machines. And so that's prior to the election. And I think right now many of the firms are going through the post-election audit. So I don't know that we have all that information.
And they do the hand count.
What?
Also, they do the hand count.
The hand count
is part of that.
Right. I can get you more information on that, and I can point you to where that is on the website. I'll just bring out some business.
So you just talked about pre-election testing and verification. I'm interested in post-election.
We
yeah.
do that also.
So have there been any audits performed? And if there have, what were the results? Have you found any machines that were off by, say, a margin of a half a percent or more? Yes.
This is my understanding, and I could probably get this confirmed or refuted by my colleague Harvey Branscombe. The logic and accuracy test goes through, I think, every machine, but with a mere 25 votes tested to make sure it's not being rigged, as you're saying.
Yeah.
But there are other inadequacies or vulnerabilities there with the ability of the machine to discern voter intent. Be it an overvote, or some ballots will record an overvote or an undervote inadvertently, and that kind of testing would need more extensive testing than a mere 25 ballots running through the machine. And the state of testing and certification of everything in Colorado is still a gray area to me, and I'm hoping that between the Secretary's office and maybe Paul Holton's office here, that they're going to tighten it up for the next election.
Final thing I'd just like to say, I wish the Secretary Gesser was here today, but I really applaud his efforts to clean up the voter rolls, to make sure that people who want to vote and are eligible to vote can do that easily and legally, and people who do not have the right to vote have their names taken off the list. He's gotten a lot of flack for that, and I really appreciate that effort.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just briefly, I'm just a citizen.
Just a citizen.
Oh, right.
I don't have any official capacity.
That's okay.
My name is Judy Krall. I don't have a lot of sympathy for any of these statements, because the problem is not the Secretary of State's office, it's the legislature. All we have to do is have clear voter registration rules, photo ID. We spend hours and hours and hours doing all kinds of tasks that are not important. We could sure as heck get our voter ID pinned down. That would solve all of our problems, and we wouldn't even need the Secretary of State's office. I mean, enforcement is not the problem. It's the legislature.
Thank you. I'm going to try to go for people who haven't spoken yet.
I'm Alan Hilliard. I was a candidate in Boulder for House District position. And first, I'd like to thank the Commission. Thank you so much for all the effort that you do to try and keep elections fair and honest. And for those in the room also, where this is an interest, whether you're a candidate or have been a poll watcher or election judge, I appreciate it. We asked for a recount. And we did not ask for a recount because we thought the outcome would change. We had a 4,000 vote differentiation between my opponent and I. We asked for a recount because the canvassing board brought to our attention that there was so much lack of transparency in the Boulder elections that we were trying to find a way to get our election office to allow citizens to see what was going on behind those closed doors. Our estimate, one of you mentioned, I think what you, your high estimate was 7,000, was it, for your recount, $7,000?
Yeah.
Ours was $27,777. There's about 50,000 voters in my House district. Of that, the largest chunk was statute research. Statute research. What is statute research? I really like to know why so much money has to be spent on statute research. But it was clear to us, and I certainly went into this election blind and naive, that everything would be done fairly and that there was going to be complete transparency, as did our party chair. We gained a very different view by the end of the election, and I'm not sure why it is an advantage to a county clerk to keep that information from the designated individuals who are trusted with the counting of the votes and the verification. And I'm still not clear, especially in our county, where our county clerk's party affiliation has a very clear advantage, double that of my party affiliation, and it wasn't a matter of outcome. Why would they need to keep that information so close to the vest? So I would love to see another way other than a recount, and I'm not sure if you have suggestions, or maybe that's going to be done in a report, on how these citizen volunteers who are giving up time and a lot of effort and energy to help keep the vote transparent can get the information they ask for.
Thank you. Well, with respect to Boulder, we do have a Canvas report that we are working on. As some of you may know, the Boulder Canvas Board did not certify the election. The Secretary of State's office accepted the results in the final abstract that was sent to the state, accepting the winners of the race. However, the election is still not certified. So with respect to that, there is an investigation that was done, and we are still compiling that report. The second thing that's currently happening in Boulder is we're attempting to set a hearing date on a HAVA complaint, which is a Help America Vote Act complaint that was filed by another individual in Boulder regarding what is referred to as the Bell and Howell machine, which is a sorting and signature verification type machine, and whether or not that's part of a voting system. So that is also in the works. So those are two things we're still working on in Boulder. I think some of the things you've addressed are probably more addressed in the legislature, you know, as we move forward in the session. And that is one thing that I would encourage everyone in this room. You know, one of the very inspiring things about having gone around the state and doing these kinds of events is we've heard from so many just very real people and their real issues. And those are the issues that are important to us, and they're also important to your legislators. So as you, you know, see legislation come that's of interest to you, I mean, I certainly think we're going to see something happen with canvas boards, maybe provisional ballots. There will be some legislation around elections this year. There is every year. And encourage you to come and testify before the legislature, write letters or send emails, make phone calls about these things that you are interested in, because certainly the perspective that you all bring is so valuable and important to our process. So thank you very much for your comments. Yes.
Through the conversation, I had a couple more comments. Ed was a career with IBM for 28 years and the IT background. I too am suspicious of the machines. And I thought the gentleman made an excellent point of auditing the machines, but the audit needs to occur the day of, in the morning, and at the end of the day of the polls. In our county, we audit or we test the machine about a week before the election. And the machines are moved all around through the precincts. They've been shuffled and moved and so forth like that. So how do we know that at the day of the election that they are calibrated and are accurate? So I guess that I would recommend that an hour before the poll opens, that there is, the machines are calibrated and tested, and again at the end of the day, or maybe it's throughout the day. Maybe we could, you know, at least have throughout the period of the day, take a 10 minutes and run some ballots through there to ensure that the calibration is accurate. And the other thing too is, like, you know, I think that if people really, some of the other issues were maybe getting two ballots and stuff like that, but I would think that if people really fully understood the penalty of voting twice and fraudulent voting, and if you made that great big bold letters on the ballot, or right there at the polling place, you know, I think it's in 5 years. You know, if there's people who are coming in there that can't speak the language, they have to call somebody at the polls so they have a vote. You know, if we have that in several languages at the polling places or on the ballot, I would think that right there, that would be a deterrent, that people that are not qualified to vote would be deterred. So anyway, those are just the thought I had, and thank you.
I was at the polling location of 84th and Federal on election day, and outside after the at 7 o'clock, I noticed that there was the refreshment truck there, and I was about 30 feet away, and I took a picture of it because I thought it was odd that an Obama stickered car could be that close to the people who were voting in line to vote at 7 o'clock, which had arrived about 20 minutes to 7. But I was doing another job at, you know, until 7 o'clock. So the point that happened was I was taking these pictures, and two people from that vehicle came over to me, and I had borrowed somebody else's iPod. And what they did to me was they were about 10 inches from my face and were trying to get my iPod. And and the point is, I felt physically threatened. I took enough pictures to show what was occurring, and I found out that in Ohio, at all of the major cities in Ohio, these same refreshment trucks or whatever were there the whole day in many locations, and in Detroit and other states, and also in Denison, Iowa. I'm talking to a relative who said, oh yeah, this all day in Denison. The point is, I think those things need to be stopped because it is affecting, or could be perceived to affect, the vote. And I think it is wrong, and I think we need to stand up against that.
Thank you, and I appreciate that. We did hear comments on that around the state about the 100-foot location, and that actually is in the jurisdiction of the sheriff or the police department. And that was another issue we heard, is that, you know, police were called out and really didn't understand the laws, and so that's another area where we need to do some improvement.
Well, I know in Denison, the police did arrive about 4 in the afternoon,
yeah,
after having been, been there all day long, and said, well, been there so long, we'll just let them stay.
Right.
So there is some
opportunity for training there. Is there anyone else who hasn't spoken that would like to speak? Going to come on up.
Thank you, Deputy Secretary and members of the Commission. I'm Mary Eberle. I'm from Boulder County. And I'd just like to throw out a few ideas about the mail ballot process. They're not all original to me. One person I worked with during the election suggested that the service centers be opened the day that the ballots are sent out, so that people who are settled on what they wish to vote for can easily and immediately return their ballot, and there's no chance of it being lost. I thought that was a good suggestion. I'd also like to suggest that when people hand return their ballots, that there be a bipartisan team of election judges to receive the mail ballot and check an ID. And if that were done, then that ballot could be then considered to be cast and not have to go through signature verification. That would require a change in statute, but it, the signature verification process that I witnessed was very poor, and I think that a lot of people are starting to be concerned about this, and it doesn't bode well for voters' confidence in our election. So if there was a way to make the mail ballot process a little more parallel to the polling place election process, I think that would be really valuable. And I am looking forward to the report on Boulder.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else who hasn't spoken who would like to speak? Did you want to go?
I'm Barbara Gessler, Scott's mother, and I was at a polling place where I was an election judge, and we had a lot of people come in who said, oh, I received a mail-in ballot, but I didn't get a chance to send it in. So I would direct them to this long, snaky little line that was going to provisional ballots. They weren't happy about it, and I said, this is the way that we can check to make sure you have not voted twice. Because if you vote twice, you are breaking the law. They immediately went out to their cars, got their mail-in ballots, filled them out, and put them in the red box. All we have to do is have a big sign saying it's against the law to vote twice, fill out a provisional ballot if you do not have your mail-in ballot, etc. Simple as that. The problem can really be solved with legislation. And you think I'm going to be politicking here because Scott is for voter ID. It's the only way that we can verify that the people that are getting ballots are the right people. We can look at their driver's licenses and their Colorado IDs. There's lots of ways we can look at them. I was at O'Hare Airport 2 years ago and lost my driver's license. In order to get through security, I had to have ID, photo ID. I was frantic. The only thing I had was a Costco card. And I showed it to the security, and they accepted it because my picture was on it with my name. So don't tell me that we can't get photo ID. I see a lot of people at Sam's Club that are not legal citizens that have a Sam's Club card. So I know it's possible. As far as the election day, we had problems with people who were insisting on voting even though they didn't register. So I insisted that they go to the provisional ballots. Out of 900 voters, we had 99 provisional ballots. It was our only way of checking our voting. It's possible to have something run very smoothly. If people don't want to stand in line, they'll fill out their ballots and put them in the ballot box. Okay.
For anyone else who wishes to speak, ma'am?
Hi, my name's Pat White, and I'm just a citizen. So I was wondering if you have online or somewhere explanation of security handling, how you handle ballots, and because I know Mr. Gessler was getting heat for some of the smaller counties. We might be able to tell that this is the only Democrat there and identify them. So there's this tension between making sure that everyone is authorized to vote, but at the same time keeping them from being known. So is there something that tells us how votes are collected at a given polling place and how they're transported and what keeps them secure and what keeps somebody from finding a trunk load of ballots like has been reported with Al Franken? How do you know that the ballots turned in are the ballots that were really voted?
I can answer that because
like they were turning ballots.
Ah.
Okay. At a polling place, when the ballot boxes are taken down to the election division, mm-hmm. there must be one Democrat and one Republican. Mm-hmm. They must drive together with the boxes in the trunk of the car. They are then driven, they drive into the parking lot behind the elections division in Denver. And there are security guards there. There is a big Ben that has a sign on it with somebody guarding it that says provisional ballots. You pick up your red bag and you pick up your blue bag and you throw it in. Then you also have another guard that picks up your ballot boxes and takes them into the
Okay. Are they sealed with unique number and the number's recorded somewhere and matches up?
No way, unless you've got a blowtorch. You can't open those
okay.
And you know, all of,
and we don't carry blowtorches.
Okay. And all of that is contained in Rule 43.
Okay.
Is
I
website.
You know, I do use the internet, but I don't know where to go to look.
If you go to the Secretary's website and you look up election rules and rules 43, you will find the security rules. Now, mm-hmm. I will warn you, they're kind of dense. you know, it doesn't mm-hmm. read like a novel, but you'll see the protections that are in place for bipartisan teams mm-hmm. and video cameras and security and those kinds of issues that make sure that there is a chain of custody from the ballot box okay. all the way to the tabulation.
Is the polling place video recorded
it
also?
Is.
So
yes.
Okay, good. And just another thing
well,
that
well,
I...
Well, the tabulation area is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I had read also on the web about some gentleman. He was a conservative. He was very distressed to find that his retarded brother had been signed up to vote and, you know, the residents of the home were... This was Florida, I believe, not Colorado, but the developmentally delayed residents of this home were signed up, registered to vote, and then taken in a van and apparently told how to vote.
Well, I mean, that would be a violation of federal law if somebody told them how.
What,
I mean,
who is capable of voting? I mean... there's not supposed to be a poll tax or a test for voting, but there are some people who obviously should not vote. What is the... How do you determine that?
Well, I think I'll let our ADA advocate answer that question. But
well, here in Colorado, there are no restrictions on the right to vote based on any type of mm-hmm. disability or including cognitive or intellectual disability or even guardianship status. We're one of about 8 states mm-hmm. that have no restrictions whatsoever. And I personally go out into the disability community, including to the state hospitals and to community centers where people with intellectual and developmental disabilities gather mm-hmm. and do voter registration. And I will tell you that I've been very impressed with the folks who I have registered and who have expressed an interest mm-hmm. in voting have been pretty informed in terms of the election. But there are no tests, there are no competency tests mm-hmm. For the right to vote in Colorado. And I'm very proud of that when I talk to my colleagues from around the country. Mm-hmm. I think it's something we should be very proud of.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else who hasn't spoken who wishes to speak on an issue? Please come on up.
My name is Darlene Waldron, and the reason I'm here is that I'd like to know what they can do about sending applications out for deceased persons. And my husband has been deceased about 8 years now. And I received 2 different letters. I'm sorry that I tore up the letters and I did not save the organization that I received these from, but I received 2 voting registrations from 2 different organizations. Now, I immediately took those down to Arapahoe County where I lived and talked to the people there, and a month after he was deceased, I had turned in that he was deceased. So they had that in the rolls, that he was deceased a month after he was in the voting rolls. So how would someone obtain these names and be able to send these out that many years later to deceased people? And in the meanwhile, I moved from Arapahoe County to Adams County. But I was found with, or my husband was, my deceased husband, with his name on the ballots, not mine, at my new location, which was a whole year later. I mean, you know, I've been to the new location a whole year. So to me, I know when I talked to Social Security previously, when my husband was deceased, they told me they had about 300 people a day that were dying in the Social Security situation. That's a lot of people might get votes, might get ballots, or get registration papers. So I think that's rather significant. Yes, ma'am.
Were any of those that pieces of mail forwarded, or were they?
No, they were not forwarded. They were the name and my new address. And so, in other words, I have been out of Arapahoe County 7 years. With a new address, 7 years out of the Arapahoe County, and my husband was deceased in Arapahoe County 7 years prior. So that's, I mean, I think that's a big thing, because that's a lot of deceased people that could be, might be voting in some area. I don't know how this would all work, but that does happen.
The latest numbers I've heard, I mean, we do coordinate with the Department of Health on getting death certificates, and I think, I don't know how many weeks back, but last I heard it was about maybe a month it took us to get the certificate and the removal.
Into the system.
Right, but we do enter those into the system, and so if there is an organization working off
there's
of
some organizations.
Some kind of old data.
Because that's really old.
Very old list.
Right, and like, they're using an old list, and you know, that may be something that we try to address this session when we talk about. We haven't heard a lot about the VRDs today, the voter registration drives. Mm-hmm. We heard a lot about that in some of the other communities we went to. But in terms of the voter registration drives and some of the confusion that it has created among voters and their status, that may be one to address, soliciting registrations that are known to be invalid.
Somehow. Because, like I said, I went to the county clerk in Arapahoe, whom I know, and he was taken off the list a month after, so it's been almost eight years that he hasn't been on the list. So, okay, thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
If I may just offer comments, my name is Tom Tosio. I live in Jefferson County, and I think there's an important distinction to make in regard to this testimony, and that is that there are certain third-party organizations that send out voter registration forms. And my guess is, based on what she said, I can't assure this by any means, and maybe entirely wrong, but my guess is that there are certain third-party organizations that mailed her husband a voter registration form. And this is based on media reports from around the country. And one of those organizations is, I believe, the Voter Participation Center that has run into controversy in various states for mailing applications to dead voters based on subscription data. So I would just refer that back to you and the commission for your follow-up on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me take the new speaker and then Wendy Warner. We're trying to
get up there and start talking.
Yep. 3 minutes. 3 minutes.
Just get up here and start talking. Well, I'm pretty good at that.
Pardon, what did you say?
3 minutes you can shoot for.
Right.
If you have written comments, you can always submit it.
Yeah, I do plan on submitting some written comments as well.
I'm Wendy Warner. I'm chairman of the Denver County Republican Party. My comments have to do with some observations I had from my poll watchers and some written documentation that I have from them and reports from them. This is not complete yet, so I will be submitting some written comments when I have finished all of that and the survey that I am doing of our poll watchers and judges. So these are just my concern based on what I have looked at to date and the interviews I've conducted to date. One of our major concerns is the appearance of same-day registration and voting. I know that the way it's handled in Denver is, and the way it was handled on Election Day, is that anybody could walk up to any polling place, not the service center, but the polling place, register, and appear to vote. Now, they were voting in a provisional ballot. In most of those cases, but registering, and it was not explained to them that this was a provisional ballot that wouldn't count if this wasn't an appropriate emergency registration. Nor has there been any counting, although I have not worked yet with the Election Division on getting an accounting of these provisional ballots. But in any case, they did register. And they registered even though sometimes they said such things as, I'm from California, and I'm registered and have voted there, but I was told I could register and vote here, too. And they were registered and voted. There are people that are from, from other states saying, well, I think I voted in Massachusetts 4 years ago, and I don't know if I'm registered or not, but I want to vote. And they went or processed as if they were in actuality voting. Now, I'm not saying that those votes were counted, but that is very misleading. Now, we were originally told that anybody that was not registered would be referred to a service center to see if they qualified for emergency voting. But instead, all the judges were instructed, and in some cases had to sign documents, is my understanding, that they would let anybody who came in that day register and vote, although it did have to go through the provisional status. Now, I certainly have concerns about whether those are valid registrations, because even if the vote itself was knocked out as a same-day registration vote that what didn't qualify, and we don't know if it was or not knocked out, that registration remains, and we don't know if that's a valid registration or not, because it didn't go through the real normal process at all. And I'm very concerned about that, what had taken place, especially with the people that came from out of state. And one lady just saying, hey, I'm through on a business trip, and somebody approached me on the street and told me to come in here and register to vote. You know, that doesn't give me a good feeling about the voter integrity. We had some variances among the treatment of different people that came into a polling place and were not in the correct one in Denver. In Denver County, you have to go to your correct voting place on Election Day and vote only at where your precinct is. And if you don't, I guess you can get a provisional ballot, but they just were taking anybody, and it didn't even matter if they were Arapahoe County or a different county. They were just voting them on a provisional ballot and not referring them necessarily to their proper precinct. And I will literally be able to tell you which polling places these kinds of things took place at. Second point, that first part was about my concern about just general registration and voting. Second one is I think there's great variance in the enforcement of electioneering at the polls. Supervisory judges seem to have a lot of discretion on whether they cite a violation or stop something or not. Some of the specific problems that we found repeatedly was that a Democrat poll watcher in the polling place was allowed to talk to voters, was allowed to take them aside and fill out their registration work for them and assist them on that without going outside the 100-foot limit. And just in general, asking people in line if they could assist them. At one point, the Democrat, in one of my precincts, the Democrat poll watcher was handing out provisional ballots and giving instructions on how to fill them out. Now, the judge in that particular case, this poll watcher had done a number of things, and she kept trying, the supervisory judge kept trying to stop her from doing that, but she didn't throw her out, and the behavior persisted. So it's very disconcerting to know, especially when I got reports from all of my people, and I had really made them swear on a stack of Bibles that they wouldn't talk to anybody but the supervisory judge on pain of death, and then to see this happening on the other side without any action at all. And when the poll watcher asked the supervisory judge, it sounded like there just wasn't training on this subject whatsoever. People just didn't understand that at all.
You're at about 6 minutes.
And I have more.
I know. Do you want to just submit that in writing, or do you have any other quick point you want to wrap up?
I have one more that I'd like to do, but I certainly have a lot more that has to do with the polling places themselves, you know, not having access by handicapped, et cetera. But the other one I would say is that major political figures were allowed to walk in the polls at will without any poll watching certificate and talk to the voters right there in the election room. People like Federico Pena and others.
Excuse me, Federico Pena was credentialed at every polling location.
Oh, was he? Okay. He didn't show his credentials when they were there. He just walked in and started doing it. Okay.
Sure he was.
But that appears, again, what's the appearance? You've got people who are well-known political figures going in and talking to voters in the polling place. Poll watchers are not supposed to talk to voters. Poll watchers are not allowed to talk to voters in the city and county of Denver.
I'm not going to get into an argument with you.
Did he show the certificate that you had registered?
I wasn't there.
No, so what she said
she said he was uncredentialed. That's all I did.
Well, he didn't show credentials. They did not see them showing the credentials.
Her first sentence was that he was uncredentialed.
No, that he was a major political figure in there talking.
Uncredentialed.
You said, excuse me, ma'am, I credentialed him. And then she said that he presented, which you don't know.
Okay. I will have a lot more. If you have more time, I'd be glad to do that. And I will be submitting a full report. But after I talk to my own Denver Election Division, who has been very responsive in many, many ways, and I do want to give them the advantage of or the option to see what I present also. Thank you.
Thank you. And if you could submit those comments in writing, I would appreciate it. I'll have some of my business cards out in a few minutes. Anyone else who wishes to speak on an issue? Anyone who hasn't spoken yet? Marilyn, you said that Mr. Arnold was going to be here soon?
Yeah, he told me that he was on his way. I had another question or comment on provisional ballots. May I make that?
Sure. Stephanie, would you mind getting some of my business cards? They're in my top drawer.
Great. Since I was last up here, I've heard several comments about voters that, particularly provisional voters, that people are concerned whether or not they were legitimate voters and how will it be followed up on? Can it be followed up on? And the only provisional numbers I have seen are in Boulder County. And in Boulder County, we saw 34 provisional voters that had actually voted a mail ballot, and they voted provisionally. Yes, I understand that it was caught, and so the second ballot was not counted. But nevertheless, apparently those people tried to vote twice. Then there were 248 voters whose ballots were rejected who were not registered voters in or even residents of the area. So the question is, given this black hole that the ballots are in, and as I understand it, the Secretary's interpretation of the law, with which I disagree, is that no one can know who those voters were who attempted to vote illegally, and that you can't even turn those names over to the DA. So what will be done about if we had 248 in Boulder, 270-something that I just mentioned, if we had that in Boulder across the state, there had to be thousands. what can be done if you all continue to take the viewpoint that provisional voters, no one can know anything about them?
Well, I mean, as to the 34, whether or not that's their intent to vote twice, I mean, as we heard, Denver had a system this year where you could track your vote. So if your envelope didn't get counted on election day, I could certainly see people who walk into the polls and choose to cast provisionally to ensure that one way or the other their vote gets counted. Now, maybe their ballot comes in later that day and the ballot gets counted. That person, I don't think, was attempting to commit fraud of any kind. They were just trying to ensure their vote got cast. And so you do have situations, especially with such a high mail-in ballot rate and such a high number of people coming in to cast provisionals who haven't got, who don't have their ballot to surrender.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they don't have their ballot to surrender either means A, they tried to vote it and it never arrived, or B, they never got it. But either way, you have people out there casting provisionals who maybe do have a ballot in. Maybe it was voted by someone else. Maybe it was voted by them and it just was in snail mail. So there's a lot of different categories that those provisionals could go in. So
absolutely,
I don't think you can look at the 34 and say they tried to commit fraud, because you just don't know until you start looking into the numbers. Who's mm-hmm. going to look into those numbers?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a very good question.
Mm-hmm.
Boulder's numbers are out. I know El Paso's are out. Right now, we are just starting to get the numbers in on provisionals to see what the acceptance codes were, what the rejection codes were, the totals throughout the state. And we'll be taking that data and aggregating it and trying to, you know, come up with a policy on what to do with that moving forward. And certainly provisional voting is going to be a huge topic this year in the legislature, whether that's addressed directly through provisionals or whether that's addressed through same day or closer registration. The issue of provisional is going to keep coming up. So,
right.
You know, I certainly understand those concerns, and we are looking at those internally, and would again just encourage people to pay attention to that legislation and talk to your legislators about those processes.
You were mentioning that those numbers are coming in. They are supposed to be on the official abstract that the counties have.
Right.
But apparently the counties are not all honoring the fact that all of those codes and the numbers are supposed to be on the abstract. What can we do about that when the counties tell us, no, we're not going to give that to you because we don't have to?
Well, we're collecting that information. Once we have it, we will be distributing that.
Okay. Well, I agree that those types of situations really do need to be looked at, but there's Mark. I hope that you can give us some answers very soon on how the parties, the public, and law enforcement can look at those things.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mark Arnold.
Yes, ma'am.
We have been waiting.
I wish you guys had.
Never underestimate the filibuster that has been going on.
I've been driving. Where do you want me?
Right here at the podium.
I've been driving since 5:30 this morning, so I haven't had much time to compose myself or my notes.
That's okay. We know you came from Chafee, so we appreciate
you. We came a long way.
You coming. We hope you join us again on the Western Slope.
I'd like to. My name is Mark Arnold. Some of you know that back in August, using publicly available documents, was able to find my own ballot out of the Chafee County voted ballots from the 2012 primary election. I was also able to find my wife's ballot, a couple members of the Republican Party's ballots, and two of our county commissioners' ballots, our county attorney's ballot. Anybody who I wanted, I could find a ballot. I just found the ones that I felt like were relevant and could be used as a good example. So, election integrity is very important to us in Chafee County and to me specifically. David Williams composed a letter. He's our chair of the Chafee County Republican Party that I brought with me. I brought a copy for you guys as well. That wanted to be read into the record today.
I'd like to copy that.
And excuse me. This is from David Williams, the chair of the Republican Party up there. This was approved by the Chafee County Republican Central Committee. Dear Secretary of State Gessler, in the context of your announced Colorado Election Integrity Tour, and the Chaffee County Republican Central Committee would like to respectfully request that you implement a permanent election rule prohibiting the use of any unique individual identifiers on ballots. This would be an extension of the temporary election rule issued on August 20th, 2012 for the 2012 general election. We would hope that the rule wording would make it clear that ballots, except as absolutely necessary for military or overseas ballots, should not have any individual unique identifiers of any kind. The Colorado Constitution states, no ballots shall be marked in any way whereby the ballot can be identified as the ballot of the person casting it. Chaffee County Republicans believe that ballots should not be traceable to voters by anyone, including members of the public, election judges, the clerk, or the clerk's staff, or commercial companies who print and mail the ballots. It is clear from the numerous examples of counties that don't use unique ballot identifiers, as well as from the 2012 general election, that these identifiers are not essential to a properly conducted election process. Not having ballot identifiers is a much better policy than relying on assertions that such unique identifiers cannot be used to trace ballots. Thank you for your consideration. Sincerely yours, David Williams, Chairman, Chaffee County Republican Central Committee. So, in Chaffee County, we feel like you shouldn't be able to trace ballots no matter who you are. The clerk shouldn't have access to figuring out whose ballots are whose. Anybody in government shouldn't have access to figure out whose ballots are whose. Whether or not a clerk has sworn an oath, unfortunately, does not make that person infallible. So to rely on the fact that an oath has been sworn by a clerk doesn't necessarily mean that traceable ballots can't be used for all sorts of other purposes. So that's the ballot traceability stuff. The Central Committee had some other quick things that they wanted brought up before this group. We're obviously kind of all getting involved with the clerk's office down there and learning different things. And there's some stuff that has been maybe done wrong in our county and probably a lot of counties for a lot of years. And we're wondering if there's some simple one-page documents that can be put out by the Secretary of State's office that would be real simple go-to guides for certain parts of the election process. One of those documents would be nice to know, a document that would clearly describe the political parties' roles and responsibilities as part of the election process. As a vice chair of the Republican Party in Chaffee County, what are my roles, what are my duties, what are my obligations, what should I do and shouldn't I do, should we do as an organization, to be involved and to aid in the process. So a simple, concise document that just was a one-pager that had, hey, rules, rights, responsibilities, what do you do as a political party? I'm sure all that stuff is already on print. Some of it's in 2,000 pages that we get to sift through to find it, and sometimes a one-pager would be really simple for those of us who can't read that much. Another one along the same line, the rules, the rights, the responsibilities of the poll watchers, the election observers, other types of citizens that may be very interested and want to be very involved but aren't necessarily part of a political party or political organization. Broad spectrum of people are very interested in how elections run, and so these poll watchers and things, it seems like we get a big, you can't do that all the time, and it'd be nice to have a one document where we could go to and say, hey, here's what I'm allowed to do, here's what you're required to let me do, here's what we can do together to make this a better election process. And then some of the specific issues we've been having there in Chaffee County are the processes for identifying and selecting the election judges. I'm new to all of this, and so when you come into something new and the answer is we do it that way because we've always done it that way, or the answer is, well, those are the election judges that I've been using for the last 20 years, we would like to use the same ones, those answers aren't good enough, because we can find spots that's obviously not how it's supposed to be done. To my understanding, the political parties are supposed to have a part in picking which judges we send up there to represent us for the election. And the same thing would go for what are the duties of election judges versus mail-in judges. And probably I'm covering stuff that was already covered hours ago in this room. I apologize. But election judges versus mail-in judges, are they the same people? Are they different people? Do they have different responsibilities? Poll watchers are always there on election day when the results are coming in, but what about poll watchers for the mail-in stuff? And so how are those things work together, mail-in and actual election day, and how do they work separately? Again, a one-pager, a concise document that said, this is how we select election judges. And I don't know if these need to go to everybody, if they need to go to clerks associations, but some of these clerks are doing things really well because they are learning new as they go. And some of the clerks are doing things really poorly because they've always done them really poorly. And that just isn't going to work anymore. So that's what Chaffee County sent me down here to get on the record.
Well, thank you.
Thank you guys very much. Thanks for your patience and waiting for me.
Yeah, appreciate your attendance. And again, we'll be out on the Western Slope in January. So
where are you going to be?
I'm not sure if the schedule's been completely set, but I know we're making two or three stops out on the Western Slope on a two-day tour, and then we're making another two-day tour in the south and the west. I mean east. So
cool.
Yeah, so we should be able to do another four or five of these and hopefully get a lot more great input.
And how has the input been thus far? I saw some cool stuff on YouTube. I thought
we've had
some great little pieces that I've picked up.
It's been some really great input by a lot of just citizens who were poll watchers and precinct captains. And, you know, it hasn't all been positive, but
That's how we all learn.
Yeah, but it's all been really great comments, and we appreciate certainly people like you becoming involved in the process and learning about it. So
thank you, guys.
Does anybody else who hasn't spoken wish to speak? All right. Well, I think that will conclude the Best Practices and Vision Committee. And just want to thank all the members of the committee for coming in today. And really big thank you to the public for coming down here and giving us such wonderful ideas. These will all be considered by the Secretary's office, and if you have any additional written comments, we certainly appreciate those. And Stephanie in the back of the room, I think, has the business cards. They're up on the table. If you grab one, that's my email address and phone number, and feel free to send me any of the documentation that you have, and we will make sure it gets to the right person if it's not me, and get back to you with some sort of response. So thank you very much, and we're, unless anyone else has anything, we're adjourned. Before you all go away, will you check your calendars for February 13th, please, for our next meeting?
I don't know. I already have that on my calendar.
I think Chet sent it out.
Okay. All right. But you fill in great.
That makes it easy. Those title boards.
I think I responded. Did I send you an email? Maybe I did. The ones that were here. I guess I just put it on my calendar. It's
you
fine.
May have just put it on your calendar.